Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 19th of December, Anno Domini 2015, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, and nothing loose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues.
I do. I already have.
You already have the blues? Yeah, you do.
It's trivial stuff, but you know, it's just like...
I know.
Seriously?
I know. All it takes is that one little glitch in your schedule.
Yeah, you know, it kind of throws off the whole flow. Yep. I mean, the guy's coming out from the poker show, I lost track of all time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shoot, I got to get into the studio. Usually I come in a few seconds before you guys and take over from Al.
Right.
To kind of make the transition smooth.
Right. Nothing smooth about today.
No, it's like, you know, all of a sudden waking up late and you're trying to rush, like, get out yep. to make up those few minutes, and no matter what you do, it ain't happening.
It ain't happening.
No, not today.
All right, one of a heaping collection of critical bug fixes pushed out by Microsoft on December 8th as part of the company's monthly patch Tuesday was an update to the Microsoft Office suite designed to close a vulnerability that will allow an attacker to sneak past Outlook security features. While the patch addressed multiple vulnerabilities in the way Office manages objects and memory, the most severe of them allows for remote code execution through a specially crafted Microsoft Office file, Microsoft reported. Now, more details of just how bad that vulnerability is have been provided by security researcher Haifei Li in a paper. The vulnerability allows a crafted attachment to an email to bypass Outlook's layers of security by exploiting Office's object linking embedding, which are OLE capabilities, and Outlook's transport neutral encapsulation format, or TNEF, the email attachment method associated with Outlook's messages, winmail.dat attachments. OLE objects are handled differently by Outlook without the new patch. They are rendered within the email and call code from the application they're based on. Breaking out of the sandbox that Outlook usually contains documents within to prevent malicious scripts from launching. As a result, an attacker could build a TNF email and send it to the user. When the user reads the email, the embedded OLE object will be loaded automatically, noted Haifei. This sort of vulnerability makes for an extremely dangerous phishing attack. The victim doesn't even have to click on anything within the email for it to execute, as it opens automatically when the email is viewed. And that automatically opened attachment can even be a flash exploit, as Haifei confirmed in testing. The OLE method can even be used within the context of an email message sent as an attachment. Outlook automatically sees .message files as safe and opens them in an Outlook message view rather than sandboxing them. And as a result, any OLE content within them will also automatically be opened. This makes the vulnerability wormable, Haifei noted. An exploit could resend itself as an attachment from the first victim to others in the victim's address book, spreading the exploit quickly across whole organizations. If you haven't been able to apply the patches from December 8th yet, Microsoft has recommended turning off the message preview pane for Outlook, which, by the way, is a good idea anyway, to prevent malicious messages from being automatically opened, and changing settings to view all emails as plain text, which is also a good idea anyway. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is unpatched Outlook email is vulnerable. And the choices are, I'll patch today, I'm using some other email program, I have no idea what email program I use, and going commando, baby. So far, we've got 22 votes, and I'm using some other email program number one, followed by going commando, and the other two aren't even on the board yet.
I was going to say, we've been discouraging using Outlook for over a decade.
Yeah. Yeah.
And shouldn't one of the choices be, you mean it was secure before?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so I know you'll all have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right, you'll see fascinating stuff. And under that, you'll see the forums or fora or fori. I don't know which that is. Yes, I do. And then the second forum is poll discussion. And currently the first one on the poll discussion is 19 December 15. Unpatched Outlook email is vulnerable. We've already got four people chit-chatting in there. And we'd love to have you join in. And then, of course, you can give us a call if you want to talk about it here, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. We've said this a thousand times. Outlook is not a particularly good email program. Well, no, it's actually a very good email program. It's just horribly, horribly
unsecured.
It's got
a lot of holes in it. It's got more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
Yeah. And
since they know so many people are using it, it's sort of the standard in businesses. It's a big target.
And the other thing, though, is, and I've run into this a number of customers over the years, they sit there and say, well, that's what came on the computer. That's what I got to use. I go, no, you don't. Yeah, well, they said it won't work. I go, yeah, it will. And, you know, you turn them over to other products to use for email.
Thunderbird, yeah. Claws, there's a dozen of them out there.
The trick is that they may not be supported by your email provider, which means they won't answer the questions.
Right.
So we'll answer your questions.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
even then, Outlook is such a standard. Everyone has instructions for how to set up your email for Outlook. In fact, most of the email programs now, you type in your username and password, and it fills in everything for you. You don't have to know your server addresses and your port numbers and all the things we used to have to know. Now it knows it for you.
Yep. No, I absolutely agree. I will say that I've used Thunderbird for decades. And there have been rumors recently, it's actually been said by Mozilla, that Mozilla is no longer going to support Thunderbird. What people take that to mean is that Thunderbird is dead and we should move on and let it die in peace. The reality is Mozilla hasn't really supported Thunderbird for a lot. They've given it a little bit of money. And now they won't. Well, big deal. There's a whole separate team doing Thunderbird.
Yeah.
It's open source stuff. And even if those people quit, somebody else would pick it up. There's a thriving and robust community of Thunderbird programmers and users. So I don't really see it going away anytime soon. But certainly...
Look how long Eudora lasted after it was officially abandoned.
It's still around.
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah.
And still not a bad program, actually.
Mm-hmm.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Roy from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Roy. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good afternoon, I guess.
Maybe.
I have two questions, which I think might be related, but I'm not sure.
Starting
about 3 or 4 days ago, during startup, after the startup is underway, in fact, I'm into the programs, a little white window pops up in the lower right part of the screen. It's a white block, and inside it says something like update number 6. And then there's a button that says install. And that's all that it says. It doesn't say who it's from or what it is or what it's for. Do you fellas have any idea what that might be all about?
What version of Windows are you running?
Windows 7, SP1. And I do have the little Windows 10 window showing up, but I'm not on Windows 10.
Yeah, I don't know what update number 6 is. Yeah. I would, the first thing I would do is dance the security tango.
That was going to be my first suggestion.
To make sure that you don't have something waiting around to grab you.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
Yep. So dance the security tango. That's at securitytango.com.
Something crawled in there and it's giving a false.
Yeah. So I would do that first and see if that fixes it, makes it go away.
I was just wondering if it was some kind of an update to the the Windows 10 files that they pre-install.
I've certainly not seen anything that just randomly called itself update number 6. No.
Okay. Okay, so I got a problem of some sort.
Yep.
Yeah, sorry.
Matter of fact, you can also go into, if you got Windows 7, down in the lower left-hand corner, you can go in that little white window and type in msconfig. That's all one word, msconfig.
Yeah.
Click on that, and it'll open up this other window. On one of the tabs is startup.
Right.
And look in that window there and see what's really starting up, because a lot of that stuff, believe it or not, you don't need in there.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff you could probably, you know, turn off.
Yeah, that said, if you don't know what it is, don't turn it off.
Well, that was my next question. Because
No. My experience is there's anything that I've seen in there as far as the startup? Seriously, I have not run into any incidences in all the years I've been doing it as far as because normally what's in there, and this I've seen even with mice. You know, want to load a mouse driver or a video driver. Those are already getting loaded anyways by the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
It might load a sound card, or the other thing it might want to do is, all right, one might be in there for a backup program. All right, you can always go back in there and turn that back on. What I'm trying to do is just get you turn everything off and see if that goes away.
Right.
Because you can always go back in and selectively turn things out. You're not deleting things there.
Yeah,
that's what's
right.
not. So it's not harmful. That's why I'm trying to tell you. You're not doing anything that you can't reverse.
Right? Yeah, well, I'm looking at that page right now. It looks like I've got about 20 items that start up.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them look familiar, but, of course, there's always that Run DLL.
Right.
Thing, yeah. Which repeats twice.
And again, those you can turn off. And again, you can turn it back on if you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let me go to my second question then.
Yeah.
I have a program on there that looks at a performance monitor.
Yeah.
And in the last couple months, for some reason, when I start up, the CPU duty cycle is fairly high. It bounces around, but it goes all over the place. Sometimes it goes up to 70, 80, 90%, and then drops back down to 10 or 15% and so forth. And this is with nothing really running. And that keeps going on and on. And I thought it was an update or something, and I left it run, and it never stops.
Right. I think you're right back to the same issue. I think there's something snuck in, and it's time to dance the security tango and get it out.
But let me give you another clue. If I just turn off my modem and my router,
yeah,
and not turn off the PC, leave it off for about 10 or 15 seconds, and then turn it back on again, the program, you know, when I turn it off, the program or the CPU usage gradually dies down to about 5% or less.
Yep.
And then when I turn it back on, it never comes back.
Yep, because whatever that program is decided it can't reach wherever it's trying to reach.
Right.
And gives up for a while. I suspect that it might come back and try again in another hour or something along that line. But, yeah, you definitely need to go clean something up.
Okay, well, nothing show. I didn't try your programs, but I do have McAfee in there, and I've tried different anti-malware things. Nothing ever comes up. And also, I can't tell when it's bouncing around like that. If I look at, procedures or processes.
Right.
It may be buried in there somewhere, but there's nothing up any number. You know, most of it is either standby or something like that, and maybe Outlook pops up now and then, you know, but there's nothing there that seems to be taken over unless it can run in the background without showing up in process.
Some things can. I would definitely dance a security tango. We got to take a break.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Roy. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Hope everybody's doing well.
It's a beautiful day in my neighborhood.
A little chilly, but we'll take it.
That's exactly right. There's no
We're back to fall.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I built a computer back when XP went away. i7 processor, 16 gigs RAM, put in a 125 gigabyte SSD drive for Windows to boot off of, and then a 1 terabyte hard drive for everything else. Thing works great, boots up Windows so fast it's scary. Problem I have now is that when I first put it in, the thing only chewed up about half the 125 gigs. Now I've only got about 22 gigabytes left.
Sure.
Windows just has this space creep thing that it does and just wants more and more space.
Yep.
Is there a way to take that 125 and clone it up to a 250?
Well,
so I don't have to reinstall every piece of software I own?
What you might want to think about doing instead is checking to see where that extra stuff is coming from. For example, it may well be your temp files are filling up the drive. One of the things that Windows does, well, that every program does, is it uses temporary files as sort of scratch pad area or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're writing a Word document or you're writing a spreadsheet of some sort, and it throws little bits and pieces out on the hard drive while you're running so that it can keep track of everything. The problem is that while most, particularly Microsoft programs, are very good at maintaining their temp files, they're very bad at erasing them when you're done with them. And so eventually that kind of creeps up. And there are a couple of ways to figure out where they are and to get rid of them. What the heck?
We're running 7 Pro, by the way.
Yeah, oddly, here at the station, it thinks that the Security Tango is a security risk, which is a little weird. Okay, but at any rate, here's the deal. You can get rid of your temporary internet files. If you go to securitytango.com, and under Let's Dance, the Windows Waltz, the very first thing it tells you about is deleting your temporary internet files.
Okay.
And so it's the temporary internet files, then empty the recycle bin, then empty your temp files. So it's a little bit of both things. So it's really the first three steps of dancing the Windows Waltz.
Okay.
And I have seen that free up, again, depending on how long that machine's been running, gigabytes of space, many multi-gigabytes of space, partially just because of those temp folders. Now, if that doesn't do it, then you're going to need a program like CloneZilla or one of those.
Well, before that, there's a program called TreeSize that will scan all of your folders and sort them by size. And you can see what folder is taking the biggest amount of space. And it may be one way to find your temp files. Also, maybe the Windows updates. It keeps all of the previous versions, so you can roll back an update. So you can turn that off if you don't want it. But this the TreeSize program, there's a free version and a pay version. Free version works fine for just you know quickly looking at your sizes. We'll show you what folders are taking the most amount of space.
Oh, and in addition, by the way, most email programs work on the C drive, not on the D drive. So you may just be full of mail.
I'm using Netscape, Thunderbird, and I have it mapped out to a folder, and all the mail goes into a direct folder on the data drive.
Okay, but that does not mean that it isn't using a lot of temp space of its own.
Okay. Well, we'll go through and we'll look at that.
Okay, perfect.
But I've done this before, where I've gone after the temp files and things like that, and it gains me like a few megabytes, maybe a couple, you know, but it's not even a gigabyte of space.
Okay.
Everything is set. I mean, the only thing I put in that C drive was Windows. All the other programs come out of the D.
Right, right.
And they're all pathed to
well, the program, now, are you saying they're pathed out of D, or you actually installed them on D?
I installed them, and then I set up the operating path, so when you click on the icon to go to that program, it goes to the D drive and runs out of there.
Okay.
I know, I'm partition crazy.
That's fine. That's not. I'm just making sure that that's actually the way you did it. So it's really got to be, unless, of course, you've got an issue, and then you should dance a security tango.
Yep.
But unless you've got an issue, then it's probably temp files, mail files, things like that.
Okay.
You should be able to get rid of some of them. If you really want to clone the drive, something like Clonezilla not SpinRite. What's the other one?
Yeah, there was one that Symantec bought and killed.
Yeah, that one doesn't count anymore. But yeah. Take a look at Clonezilla. The problem that most people have...
Ghost.
Ghost is the other one. That's the one. Thank you. EaseUS will do it. There's a couple of dozen of them. But Clonezilla and Ghost are probably the two best known ones.
Okay.
Certainly some place to start.
All right. And what was the problem most people have with it? You started to say something.
Oh no! I was saying the problem most people have is the problem you're having. They start out with what they think is going to be an absolutely huge C drive, and after a bunch of years, it's like. What?
Well, we're back to that again. In the spinning mechanical drives, we've got 3, 4, 5, 6 terabyte drives. But now back to SSDs, they're 10 times more expensive at the same capacity. So you're getting a 128 drive or a 256 drive. You want a terabyte SSD, you're looking at $600-$700 for a good one.
I know. I picked up the 125 gig at between $90 and $100 somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I paid
the prices
price
are going down.
Drive.
Yeah, $100 will get you like what, a 2 terabyte spinning drive?
Well, I got a 1 terabyte drive for $89.99 at the time I built the computer, which was it'll be 2 years this April, I think.
Yep.
But now the 250s are down to what I paid for the 125, which is about what I expect. And a 250 should work. But if I can ghost that out, then because I'm still on the fence on whether I want to go to 10 or not. I'm probably not going to do it till spring when they finally hopefully get whatever bugs are out of it that they're going to get out of it.
Right.
I'm still on the fence. Do I want to go to Linux or not? How big a drive do I need, or how much space would I want for a quote unquote typical Linux install?
Again, it's the same as it is with anything else. Windows, Linux, anything. That hard drive size you've got right now would do fine. Again, until you start filling it up with mail or programs or whatever else. But in general, it's no bigger than Windows.
Okay.
Remember the first hard drives were in megs, 1, 2, 3 mm-hmm. megs. Yep. And that was $1,000.
Because I know you guys run Linux, can you do the same kind of partitioning and path setting in Linux that you can do in Windows?
Yes, it's very, very different process, but you can do exactly the same stuff.
Okay. So I got to learn a new process.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, it sounds like a Windows 10 for now will do it, and then I got to start educating myself on Linux and how to talk to it.
Not a bad idea.
Well, and in the meanwhile, my Chromebook is really doing a nice job, and I'm really enjoying the heck out of it.
Good. See, that's the thing. I'm with you. I use my Chromebook as much as I use anything, and it works great.
Yeah, well, I'm just not into the idea of having to pay Mr. Gates' people a subscription rate, which I think is what it's going to go to eventually.
Oh, right. Definitely.
Right.
I'd rather, if that's going to happen, I'll go to Linux and make myself learn how to use Linux.
Yep.
But
Or folks are going to do like I say. I think right after the first year, what I'm actually thinking of doing is because I've got Windows 7 on my one desktop, and I did some research and checking out things and what I actually use this desktop for, and I'm literally going to disconnect it from the internet, go out and get a Chromebook, and just use that for my internet. The Windows 7, you know, it won't be on the internet, so I don't have to worry about updating and everything else. So it's a good operating system. It's solid for the other things that I want to do on it, and use the Chromebook for everything else. And I'm golden.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the way to do it.
I mean, you know, 7 is. I mean, 7 from day one came out, it was rock solid. So no matter what processor you get, you know, if you're not, you don't have to be on the internet for that particular machine. You know, you load it up with Windows 7. You don't have to worry about the patches and all this other stuff because you're disconnected.
True.
And just go with a simple Chromebook, which, doesn't get that stuff.
That's true. Oh, I know what I got. With all this new push to go to Windows 10, I get the little thing that says you should upgrade to Windows 10. But I'm not seeing my usual thing that pops up and says security updates. Because I make it tell me when it's time to install, and I take a quick look before I put them in. I don't blindly install them.
Right, right.
Has Microsoft done something whereby you don't get the automatic notifications on security updates anymore because they're pushing you to go to 10?
Well, Windows 7 reached end of life on January 13th of 2015. So they're done. Unless you are, they have extended support till 2020, and people get confused as to what extended support means. Extended support is support you are specifically paying for. If you are not paying Microsoft for support, you are no longer supported in Windows 7.
And that means no more updates.
Right.
No security updates either?
They are very reluctant. They want you to go to 10.
There was an emergency update a couple months ago for some especially bad problem.
Right, but generally speaking, they're saying, you know, it's radio silence on 7, time to go to 10.
Is the jury still out on 10?
Jury will be out on 10 for 5 years. You know, it's
mostly okay, but you got to check compatibility with all your hardware and all your software.
Right. The problem is honestly less about Windows 10 than it is about peripherals that don't have good drivers yet. Mm. NVIDIA in particular has had a couple of problems. A couple of upgrades broke NVIDIA very badly. And people were getting great upgrades, but they couldn't see anything on the screens. So you could run fine in safe mode, but the minute you tried to do an NVIDIA thing, it didn't work. And then NVIDIA would patch its drivers and then everything would be fine again until the next time around. So I think that in terms of the operating system itself, it's in awfully good shape in terms of the peripheral devices around it, particularly when it comes to device drivers, they're not 100% yet at all.
Yeah, because when I went through, when I pulled XP out, I replaced everything in the house. I mean, right. it was all new computer, all new drivers, all new software, new printers. So I'm not worried about legacy equipment. I mean, I got one old desk jet, but it's funny because it said there's no driver for it. But when I clicked on 7 and said find that printer, it prints.
Yep.
A lot
of printers have a default mode that is the old Epson or the old LaserJet or whatever, so they will print in a default mode. It doesn't use all the fancy-dancy features that you paid for, but it will print.
Well, this is kind of a... There was still ink in the cartridge, so I stuck it on the parallel port, and it's one of those, if I need to print something black and white, fast text off just to have there right at the computer. That's what it sits there for. I put a networkable HP 8600 on the house network, so everybody prints out of that. That's where the full color is, and that's where the it's an all-in-one, so, you know, scan, fax, all that good stuff is there.
Perfect.
So I just, the other one was a 6100 HP, and it was a good little unit, but, you know, I just wasn't ready to throw it out because I'd just put a new cartridge into it, so I figured if I could make it work for what I wanted it for, I'd just let it sit there until it didn't want to go anymore.
Sure. Makes sense.
So, and HP has that default HPL language that their printers seem to respond to. So,
Right, and that's what I'm saying. In a lot of cases, you'll find that it may not print to all the features, but it'll print PCL or it'll, you know, print whatever the lowest common denominator is.
Okay. Well, you've given me a lot to think about, and I'll get busy and see what I can find as far as temp files, see if I can find some space on this one. Once an update is installed, can you delete the files that were downloaded to put it in?
The only reason the files are kept around is if you want to roll back that update.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So if everything's working, there's no need to roll back.
Right. Exactly. And you can always go back there if you all of a sudden want to grab it and you deleted one by accident and get it.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
All right.
Well, you gentlemen have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
You too.
And we'll keep on listening and learning every Saturday.
That's what I like to hear. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get to everybody as fast as we can. It's 39 minutes after the hour. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Ron from Webster on the line. Welcome, Ron. What's up?
Nick, I got a Toshiba satellite. The problem started out with what I thought was a buffer problem where you would have numerous print requests. They would sit there. Nothing would happen. I'd try and clear them. Nothing would happen. So I figured it up. I did a lot of looking on the internet, and it talked about the print spooler being the problem.
Yeah.
So I made a couple of changes to the print spooler that was suggested, and then, you know, that didn't work. Now the print's gone, more or less. I can't do anything with print. And every time I try and open Excel now or TurboTax, I get a window installer message preparing to install. I've looked on the internet trying to fix that problem. I'm basically at a loss as a non-professional to fix this anymore. I can open Lightroom okay. I can open Quicken okay. But pretty much right now the machine is semi-useless without any print function. And since I'm beyond my ability to work on it further, I wanted to ask you guys what a shop or a professional would do to this machine to get it working again.
Well, if I were working on it, I would start by completely uninstalling the printers, whatever printers you have, completely uninstalling them, and see if things will work. Obviously, you can't print, okay, but things should now boot up and run. Excel should run, et cetera, et cetera. Once you've solved that side of the problem, then you can re-add a newly downloaded copy of the driver for your printer.
And also try putting, believe it or not, sometimes it can get messed up on what USB port you put it on. So if you once you uninstall it, unplug it from that particular USB port and put it on a different one. Believe it or not, they all have different addresses. Even though they look the same, they're not all the same.
Yeah, I was printing wirelessly, so that, I'm sure that when I went into the spooler, I caused the problem myself and was not able to get there. Also, there was no restore points. Restore had been turned off, so I couldn't go back and restore from an earlier restore point. Mm-hmm. So you guys are familiar with that Windows installer window that comes up preparing to install and it just sits there and does nothing? Is that something that I caused working on the print?
Well, again, it may be trying to do something with your printer, install a new driver,
without
whatever.
Without seeing the machine in front of us.
Right.
Yeah.
And what's going on, it's hard to tell.
But really, for me, the first diagnostic that I would run would be to completely remove all the prints, printers from the computer and reboot and see if everything works with no printers at all.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
And if I feel that I'm beyond my ability to do anything with this, can you give me any kind of a ballpark estimate of what it would cost to bring it in and have somebody work on this?
It depends on the, you know, I mean,
Yeah, it depends if it's a 5-minute fix or a 3-hour fix.
Right. It's very hard to say ahead of time what that sort of thing is going to be. You need to look at the machine a little bit. It's going to take at least an hour. Generally, what you should get is they'll charge you an hour to look at the machine and tell you what they think it's going to take.
Because you got to bring the machine and the printer in.
Yep.
Right.
So, okay. You know, both have to come in, and like I say, it's, again, some detective work to see and make sure that you got rid of all the references to the printer. Because here's the thing. Windows, that's why I am a big advocate of doing Revo uninstaller, because when you uninstall stuff from Windows, say the printer and all that, a lot of the remnants are left behind in the registry. Countless times.
Yeah.
You know, if you put in a driver, uninstall it, install it, uninstall. Every time you do a reinstall, it creates new segments in the registry, making it longer and slower and more reference points. So definitely, you know, clean those out, like Nick said, and see if that'll help.
Okay. And Nick, did you mention a term or a program that removes those registry points?
Well, I thought Dave mentioned Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah, Revo.
Revo Uninstaller. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, guys. Have a good holiday.
All right, good luck. You too.
Bye.
This reminds me, we will not be here next week, the day after Christmas. There will be a rerun episode of a classic Soundbites.
About last Christmas's episode.
That might work. It's the day after Christmas. We're not going to be in any shape to. We're not going to be available.
And our store will unfortunately be open for
right.
All those.
Fortunately for people,
It's hopefully we won't get any returns, and it will be people buying stuff that they wanted and didn't get.
Right. Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
The fella called a little while ago about whether they were still giving security updates for Windows 7, and I, too, have been avoiding Windows 10. And, yes, indeed, there are tons of updates. There was a big 150-megabyte one last week.
Yep, yep.
If it's
an egregious security problem, they will produce... Yeah.
No, they're given for Windows Defender and everything else. Every week there's something.
Yep.
I get to it by going to the Start button and either typing in Windows Update or going to the Control Panel and getting to Windows Update through that.
Right.
That maybe he said he had his set to tell him. Maybe it got changed to not tell him. Check your Windows Update settings.
Well, mine was to tell me, but it doesn't. All I get is a little window glass down in my right-hand taskbar, so I go through the back way.
The real problem is that Microsoft is getting very aggressive about people upgrading to 10, and they are going in and changing the way people, the way Windows works, so that people are more...
Right. Right.
I'll tell you what
they do also. When you get to the update page, there's optional and important updates. Go to the optional updates first, because in that they have install Windows 10 and it's checked. So
every time
you've got to uncheck it if you don't want it, and then go to the important updates.
Yep.
Because if you forget that, you'll get it just because they pre-check it.
Yep, exactly.
So there's tons of updates out there for the fella, so he can keep going until they figure out some other way to do it.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
Right out. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so it's exited mainstream support and has entered extended support. And it's sad, you know, Microsoft has their product life cycles, which is generally, you know, when the new version comes out, the old version gets abandoned.
Right.
But now everyone hated the new version and the newer version and now the newest version. So Windows 7 is 3 versions old and they're still being forced to support it.
Yep.
Say the same thing that happened with XP, that they were forced to support it because so many large companies, you know, were still using it that they couldn't give up on it yet.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. I'm a very moderate computer user, and I've been using Linux for quite a long time. So the Windows world is kind of off to me. But I have it's a curiosity question, in that people are having all this trouble, as you say, looking at their programs to see if they can run under Windows 10. But my question is, can't they use a their Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 in a virtual machine on a Windows 10 and then run these old programs?
Yes and no. Many people don't have enough RAM to do virtual systems.
Okay, that's what I thought.
That's part of it. Many people don't have powerful enough machines to run virtual machines with any kind of speed. And a lot of people just don't know enough about virtual machines. Yeah. It's not a...
For the average person,
right,
it's
not an
too
average
technical.
Person thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
But I agree with you. I've been running Linux forever. I often run a couple of VMs, virtual machines,
yeah,
simultaneously. I've got a Windows 7. I've got a Windows XP that I run. I run a Chrome OS.
I have been very lucky to be able to run under Wine a number of Windows programs, too. And, you know, so the Linux is suiting me well in that respect.
Right. There's also a website called alternative2.net.
Yes.
And what you can do is type in the name of a computer program, and it will find alternatives to it. So let's say you run Windows and you've got Photoshop. And you want to run it on a Mac. Well, you could buy Photoshop, of course, but maybe you don't want to spend that kind of money. So you go to alternative2.net and type in Photoshop, and it will tell you all the possible programs that are like it, but are either cheaper or free or run on a different operating system or whatever. It's a great place to... We see a lot of people saying, well, I have to run Office because it came with my machine, or I have to run Outlook because it came with my machine. No, you don't.
Well, they didn't even know that's what they were running because it came with the machine.
Right. Right. What program do you use to get to the internet? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it a big blue E? Yes. Okay. You know, yeah. And I get it. It's not, it, you know, people don't need that level of expertise.
Uh-huh.
You know, I know very, very little about what happens under the hood of my automobile, and yet I get to places every day just by getting in the car and turning the key. So I get that, but you know, there are alternatives. There are different ways to do things that are often much less expensive. And again, for 98% of the people, they work just fine. I tell people all the time, Office is so expensive. Try Google Docs. It's free. It's available everywhere, and it might do everything you need. And if not, you can go to LibreOffice, which is also free. You could go to iCloud. You could go anywhere. So people just don't know that the alternatives are available.
Yeah. And I think, as you said, for some people with those older machines, going to Linux because, and I mentioned Wine because with Wine, I've been able to run some U.S. government, like the savings bond program that was written for Windows and it runs great on Wine. I've even been able to use an H&R Block tax cut
right.
program and running it on Wine on Linux. So
right.
I mean, they can do some stuff like that if they want a partition. And Linux, like you said, it's like another car, but you know what? You get to figure out where the light switches are, et cetera.
Exactly how it works.
It just takes a little bit of learning to figure out the new way to do it. But people are afraid of change, and so that's another big reason.
Yeah,
that's another
right.
big reason
we
they're
get
sticking,
very complacent.
Yeah. And they're sticking, that's another big reason they're sticking with XP or 7 is they're used to it. That's what they have. They don't want to change.
Right. And for those of you who don't know, Wine is a way to run Windows programs under Linux.
Wine is not an emulator.
Right. And it's, yeah, don't call it an emulator because Wine stands for Wine is not an emulator. But it lets you run many, many, not all, but many, many Windows programs under Linux.
All right. Well, one last question.
Yeah.
When's going to be the Rumble show? The day after New Year's?
It's going to be the New Year's Rumbles this year. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
A little, for folks that are used to our annual Rumble, there was sort of a delay in the rum being delivered.
Yeah.
So, due to timing and everything else,
you just drank the first batch, didn't you?
Yeah.
Then I'd have a reason.
Yeah. The Rumble. And listen, for those of you who like listening to the Rumble show, imagine how great it is for those of us who are here.
Should we play that
eating
one next
the Rumbles?
Week?
Yes, we could.
We could do that. But
then we have two in a row.
Yeah. Well, do that. I'll have them for right after New Year's.
All right. We'll
then
be here for
that then. They'll be fermented pretty well by then because I just got to go pick up the fixings and all that and then just let them slowly age.
Yeah, we do look forward. We do look forward to the Rumble show every year.
Yeah, it just sort of melts the plastic there in the
yeah.
You sit, you know, sort of start sucking it in. You know, this plastic there. Put the donut in there and just.
Yep. They are tasty.
Yeah, we'll definitely have it.
They are very tasty, and we have to limit ourselves because they are very potent.
They're lethal.
It's about a shot glass size. Rumball. Shot glass worth of rum in every Rumball.
They are not moist. They are wet.
Well, like I say,
there's a lot of rum in those things.
It's Antigua rum.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I forget what proof it is. Well, whether it's 120 or whatever. Yeah. I don't light any matches.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a no-bake recipe, so I'm lucky in that aspect. You know, just sort of throw everything together and do it.
But I just thought, you're right. If we lost power here in the studio, we could light a couple of rum balls and see.
Oh, yeah.
Fine.
Piece of cake. I could use it in the luminaries along my driveway. Just light them and the rain won't even put those out.
That's frightening.
I can't even go to their website without proving I'm of drinking age in this country I live in. Which is interesting because it only actually gives you country, not state by state.
Right. Where is this? The Antigua rum?
Antigua Distillery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been getting. Friend of mine gets me that from there every year.
Yep.
And it's just been something, you know, it's a Christmas gift that comes every year. It's been cool.
And we thank him.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's just that one thing. And I mean, I might correspond with the gentleman. You know, here and there during the year, but like clockwork. Although he was off this year, I'll cut him some slack, and he did say that he'd get back to me, but oh well.
Yeah. So but we will have a Rumball episode. It'll just be the New Year's Rumball thing.
They started producing sugar in Antigua in 1674.
There
so
you
it's
go.
Got a heritage to it.
Yes, it does. All right, listen. We're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But we're going to give you the opportunity to do it all again because we've got a whole nother hour coming of the longest-running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, Mr. Rumball Maker Extraordinaire, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites and member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And to kick us off in the second hour, we have Will from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Will.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Problem is I can't even listen to you guys on the Internet.
Why? What happens?
Well, it gets up to, I'm loading. I have been having a problem with trying to listen streaming. I like the Ontario radio station.
Sure.
And the problem there is it gets up to loading and then nothing happens. So then I say, okay, I'm going to try Jazz. And the same thing happens. get on and it starts to say it's loading and then nothing happens.
That's on your Kindle.
Now when your program started, I get a different screen that says it's loading, and this time it steers me off to YouTube. And then YouTube gets up to loading and nothing happens. And I'm presently up to where there's a screen that says YouTube, and it's a black screen. It flashes something white that lasts about a half a second. It says press here to do something, but it doesn't appear and doesn't last long enough.
All right, a couple of things. What operating system are you running?
This is on a Kindle.
Oh.
Ouch.
Hey, it worked for a long time, like years.
Yeah. I just don't know Kindles well enough, I think. Anyway, all right, so you're on a Kindle, and it used to work, and now it doesn't.
Right.
Yeah, could be virus because I had another person use it and go off at the games, but then it worked fine after they left the house, so I quit blaming them for this.
Right. Boy, that's a good question.
The trouble is it doesn't act the same all the time. Each time I try, it'll go a step further in some of this. Just like it's taken about 12 times since 10 o'clock trying to listen to it. You guys.
Yeah, are you using... Okay. You're on a Kindle, and is this the version that's essentially Android?
I really wouldn't have any way of knowing.
Okay.
I know it's about 3 years old because I've been trying to learn to use it for 3 or 4 years.
Right. And you're going through the browser, the web browser?
Yes.
Okay.
The web browser works and gets to Google, which then gets to you guys, 90.1 Jazz.
Right. So you can go to the website and you click on Listen Live.
There are other links below that on the Jazz website for different quality streams and different types of streams. You could try one of those instead of the M3U stream. Down at near the bottom, there's one that says click here for low bandwidth. You can try that one.
We're moving to YouTube. Join us, that screen, Soundbites.
No, on the Jazz website.
On the Jazz website.
Okay, back another screen. Soundbites.org.
Nope, this... okay, yes. If you go to soundbites.org...
Yeah.
Up on the right, you'll see it says Our Longevity. Underneath that, it says Call Us. And if you go down, you'll see the phone numbers in red. And then under that, it says Listen Live on Jazz 90.1.
On the far right.
Yeah, enjoy sound bites. Listen, please keep this site alive or donate.
Above that.
Above it.
You'll see the link to the YouTube channel, and above that it says, and listen live on Jazz 90.1.
Yep, I see that.
All right, so if you click on that, it takes you to the Jazz Listen Live website, and you can click that button there to listen to the stream live.
And below the big one are a couple of other buttons with lower bandwidth needs.
Okay. Soundbite. On the top, click on the On the Air Now.
No, the big button that says Listen Live.
Listen Live.
I did that, and I get up to another screen that says Jazz 90.1 On the Air Now Soundbites, 12 to 2 p.m.
Below that, there's a big button that says Listen Live.
Okay. Starting download.
It shouldn't need to download anything.
The screen renewed or something. And that's all that happens.
All right. Below the big button, Listen Live, there's one that says click here to listen live low bandwidth.
No, it's not. It's downloading the M3U file, not running it.
That's...
Click to listen high speed, listen low bandwidth.
Yeah, the low bandwidth is, that's an M3U. So you need an M3U player on the Kindle.
All right. Click here to listen live to low bandwidth dial-up internet. The screen for
yeah,
that
try,
one.
Yeah, try that one and see if it loads.
Nothing. There, now it's doing its stream low. Starting download. We've been made aware of issues with Win 10.
All right. In the App Store.
Yeah. So the problem is you need an app to run that listen stream. And so Nick is going to tell you which app to get. How about does the Jazz app run on Kindle Android?
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Is the whole world changing and needing separate new apps or something?
Well, it sounds like there may have been an update of some sort that caused that issue for you. But there are a couple of programs that will do what you need.
And the problem is that there's many different ways to stream. There's different technologies that are used to streaming, and each way to stream needs a different app to do it in.
I tell you how frustrated I've been with this kind of thing. I have different computers, and it gets down to where it's easier to buy a whole new computer, $350, for my last one, well, actually $330, let's not exaggerate, from Dell for a laptop. And if you beg them right and talk right, you do not have to have Microsoft. But they are so apologetic and backdoor on the thing, because if Microsoft, they so much as try and push anything, Microsoft threatens to take away all Microsoft stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
guys run around just as pussy-footed about the whole thing.
Listen, what you want to do is go into your App Store and look for something called the HD Player.
Is VLC available?
Okay.
Is VLC available?
I don't know that. I'll look for that, too. Hold on. Actually better. Now this is, do you have the Kindle or the Kindle Fire?
Fire.
Okay. Then there is a program called VLC for Fire.
DLC?
Right. For Video LAN Corporation is the name of the company, and they named their program VLC.
And that's an app.
Right. And it's called VLC for Fire. And you should be able to install that. And when you install it, it may ask you if you want to make it the default for various things. Say yes. Then you should be able to click on those links and run them under VLC. And, in fact, I think under this version of VLC, you should be able to save a link right in VLC.
I would also have expected the YouTube to work on the Kindle Fire, too.
Well, again, if you don't have the right app, it won't.
Even the YouTube website.
I can't answer that question because I've got a desktop that has Windows stuff on it, and then I tried getting Linux, Vinux, V-I-N-U-X,
sure,
on it, and paid a computer store $100 to put it on. Then I paid him another $100 to try and fix it. And then another $100, and finally said, gee, for $330 I can buy a new Dell computer loaded with Ubuntu, and that has worked pretty good.
Good.
And does this kind of stuff, and I begin to think that the answer rather than calling servicemen or anything is just to buy another computer.
Well, sometimes that's accurate.
Go to an Android. If you like your tablets that much, go to an Android tablet.
Well, theoretically, it's Kindle Fire
like
is an
tablets,
Android tablet.
I like things that have screen readers that work.
And right. The Jazz app should work on Android. I don't know if it works on Kindle Android.
Well, that's the thing. You have actually kind of a different store.
Yeah.
And so it may not be in that store. But VLC for Fire should be able to play the stream with no trouble.
Okay.
Okie doke.
I think you've informed me that it's all the players are what's changing.
Yeah, I think so.
And that when I get the new computer, apparently I'm getting the newer player, and that's why things will work, but I can't get the old one to work.
Well, the Kindle Fire is an entirely different beast from a desktop or a laptop.
I've got another problem that's been a year long. This program where I got Linux put on my main computer.
Yeah.
It never worked properly because it says, give me the password. And the guys that installed it said the password that they put on was just password.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
It didn't work. Yeah. I don't know who put it on. I don't want to hear their name. I don't want any of that stuff. But I should tell you that you may not want to go back to those people.
That's right.
Well,
that's I think that's where that stands.
That's the best way to leave that. You know, I mean, we're not here to bash other folks.
I know. That was Linux 4. You know, somebody that can put Linux 5 on.
Well, you might want to check with the Lugor users group.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the problem. I can't get to it with a big machine. It's just too damn much work.
No, I understand that.
I'm 81 years old, and I'm willing to buy my way out of trouble. I pay, you know how that is.
Well, you might want to find somebody.
Yeah.
Right. You might want to check with the Lugor group.
Yeah, if you check.
And see if there's somebody who'd be willing to come to your home. People are generally pretty good about that stuff. Particularly if you're paying them.
Yeah. They'll make a house call. But like I say, if you go to the Luger's website or the user group there and post a comment, would anybody be willing to come over to my house? I'll pay you to install the software and see who responds back to you.
All righty.
I mean, that'd be the best. And, you know, and this way you're getting somebody who's very fluent.
I'll give Luger another chance.
There you go.
I was in them from the inception of that program and got pretty well chased out as you're just too dumb to be a part of this group.
I'm sure that there are always one or two bad eggs somewhere, but I think
you get a couple of them and you tell them your woes and their answer is, what's the question? Well, as you can tell here, I don't know what the question is. I got problems. That's all I know.
Right, right. No, I do understand. I absolutely understand that. And I'm sorry you had that experience there.
Then you go to a meeting and they tell you flake off in effect. There's one guy that fixes stuff at the meetings, Carl.
Yep.
I won't say more because you don't want names,
I don't want any of that stuff. Absolutely. No, I get it.
He's the one good guy, but he won't make a house call.
Right, right. Many, many people won't anymore. It's sad, but it's true.
Well, there's my dilemma. That's where I bought it out with his machine, but
All right, listen, Will, we got to move along.
Okay, you've heard all my woes for the last 2 years.
All right. good luck with getting that VLC for Fire.
All right,
installed.
We did have somebody text us, and they want to know, is it possible to turn my 2012 HP notebook into a Chromebook?
Actually, it is.
Sort of two ways. Download Chrome and don't use anything else.
No, there's
Or you can actually load the Chrome OS. Was it Chromium? Is the Chrome OS for regular desktops, right?
Yeah, there's a doggone it. I just saw it the other day. There's a new version of Chrome. Listen, we're going to take a break. Back in just I will answer this question after the break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
And it's half the temperature it was last week.
Shut up.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of different Chrome Chrome OSs that will run on your old hardware. And there's a new one that I just saw the other day, which looks so easy to install. And of course, I can't find the link to it right off the bat. But there are a bunch of them out there. There's one called here's the deal. The Chrome OS and the Chrome web browser are actually based on an open source thing called Chromium. the Chromium web browser and the Chromium OS. So you can actually download Chromium OS itself and use that. That's from a place called Arnold the Bat, has a real nice set for that. There's one called Chromixium, which is kind of a merging of Ubuntu and Chrome. There's another one called Elubuntu, which is really just a lightweight Linux distribution, which is designed to look a lot like the Chrome OS. And there are a bunch of others. But I will continue to look for that. Son of a pup. I will continue to look for that other one that I just found the other day. There's a guy called Hexa, H-E-X-X-E-H, who has a couple of versions that can be installed. But this new one I just found was very, very easy to use. And I just can't remember what its name was right off the top of my head. But I will get it to it, and I will put it up somewhere on the Soundbites website. Sorry that I don't have that in my head. We'll figure it out. In the meantime, we'll go back to the phones, and we'll talk to Carl, calling all the way from Pottstown, PA.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I'm running Windows 7, and I know there's a deadline by which I have to download Windows 10 if I don't want to pay for it.
Right.
Just wondering, how is it possible for me to download Windows 10 but not install it? In other words, just let it sit on the hard drive and do nothing, just so I have it, and continue to use Windows 7 until I decide I want to switch over to Windows 10, which might be a year or two from now. I don't know yet. Is it possible to do that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, Microsoft, and this is kind of shocking.
Yeah, it is.
You can download the Windows 10 ISOs, CD version, well, DVD version, from Microsoft directly. It's not even a pirated or bootlegged or anything else copy. You can download the
media creation tool.
It's the media creation tool.
It has to have a crazy name.
Yeah, they got to give it a name. And what you do is you select the version that you want, and really the best one is just Windows 10. You don't want the KN or the N or the whatever. Just get Windows 10. And you have to have a valid serial number for the machine you're going to put it on, right? So if you're going to replace a Windows 7 machine or whatever, make sure that you get the serial number off that machine before you do the install.
But you can download it and then just let it sit in your download folder. Don't install it. Or what will often happen is if you use Windows Update to download it, it will start to install immediately.
Right.
Cancel the install. And when it asks you to agree to the license, disagree. And then it will stop installing.
Right.
But the installer will still be sitting there waiting for you when you do get around to it.
Right. But you can actually burn a DVD with Windows 10 on it now,
or flash drive.
The longer you the longer you wait to install it, the more updates there'll be.
Yeah,
right. But that's just the way that is. But you should be able to download that and burn a DVD or just leave it sitting in your hard drive for as long as you want. Well, within that year. So by the end of next June.
Yeah, I say I wouldn't worry about it until like April, May.
Right, but if you want to just make sure that you've got a copy, even if you then download a different version and install it, hopefully with more updates built in, you can do that. You can go to there today. Steve's put a link.
Of course, the other cool thing, if you do it,
he's about to put a link on the site.
It won't let me put a link because I'm not on a Windows machine. The Microsoft website won't let me to that.
Oh,
page.
Right.
But if you go ahead and download that and you've got a spare machine and want to play around with Windows 10 just to see what it's all about, I mean, that's a cool way to do it. Go ahead and burn it to, like, if I do it to a flash drive. And go ahead, put it on a flash drive, because that way you can easily replace it when you get the final version. And play around with Windows 10 and see what you may or may not like about it.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea. Thanks. I think you've answered my question.
All right, excellent. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And in fact, since Windows 10 really, really, really wants to install on your Windows 7 machine, it may have already downloaded the installers because it's been doing that in the background and then popping up that message, hey, you really should download, you should really install Windows 10 now. In fact, you might catch that in the phrasing. It initially may have said you want to download Windows 10. Now it'll probably say you want to install Windows 10.
Right. Well, I should, before we go back to the phones, I should say one of our news articles today was about something strange and annoying is happening in 7 and 8. Microsoft is rolling out software changes, which are making it increasingly difficult for mainstream users to avoid upgrading to Windows 10. Along with a trio of nasty changes, the one which has caught users most off guard is a simple and highly misleading change to the language surrounding Windows 10 upgrades. In effect, Microsoft is now telling Windows 7 and Windows 8 users that they have to upgrade and it cannot be stopped. Remember, it used to be when the Get Windows 10 pop-up in Windows 7 and 8 happened, it gave users two options, upgrade now or start download, upgrade later, which is not exactly championing choice, but still better than nothing. Now the options read upgrade now or upgrade tonight. And in fact, some users don't even see upgrade tonight. All they get is upgrade now.
Well, tonight is later.
It is now later tonight, yeah. But it's a real problem for Microsoft. One of the problems is that they're kind of struggling. They're way behind on what they thought the numbers would be for the number of Windows 10 installations that are out there. The PC sector is struggling, if not actually dying. Everybody's buying tablets and phones and everything else. Areas where, well, Windows is not really much of a player. And because, you know, there's a cutoff point of like a billion PCs. It sounds like a lot, but it kind of isn't.
That's
comparatively. It's a drop.
Yeah.
But it's a billion PCs that piques the interest of app developers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you've got a choice of developing for the Mac or for Chrome OS or for any of that, where you've got billions upon billions of downloaded of machines that are running it, or Windows 10 where there's a couple of hundred million.
Where are you going to put your effort?
Where are you going to put your effort?
And right now, because you know, folks are so leery, Windows 8 made them very gun-shy. Because again, to iterate, Windows 7 came out, it was rock solid right from the get-go. Windows 8 had its issues. One, the whole look and feel of it, and Microsoft thinking that, you know, everybody was just going to get, open arms to this whole new platform of looking to make like a tablet.
Right.
Office environments did not need that change. They did not want to go with that training, nor the expense.
Right.
An effort to put an operating system that, didn't work well either with other stuff.
Right. And now they're shy to go to 10.
Yeah.
But Microsoft is really following the Steve Jobs principle. He said people don't know what they want until you show it to them. So Microsoft is figuring, show them what this is going to look like and you'll get it. So we'll see. But the Windows 10 upgrade notices are changing and it's getting harder and harder to avoid actually upgrading. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from
Cheektowaga, New York.
There we go. What's up, Joe?
Yeah, interesting story that you pointed to this week on Google Plus is that the rumor mill says they will let the July 28th date slip just because they don't have the adoption they had hoped.
Yep. Yep.
I would urge all the users listening that want to contemplate this upgrade to Windows 10, learn to use Clonezilla or something like that so that you can very easily go back if you don't like Windows 10.
Right. Theoretically, there is a go back button somewhere, but that may not last long either.
Only for 30 days, though.
And so far, Joe, just to let you know, and I've had a number of folks try to do it, two of them, they've got the Windows 10 in there, and really didn't want, you know, because again, they checked the software, it doesn't work with it. They wanted to go back, and the go back button didn't work. Others I've just had that it totally messed up their whole system, and they were like in limbo.
Oh, yeah, isn't that wonderful? You go to apply Windows 10, quote, upgrade, unquote, and it doesn't, something doesn't go right, and now all of a sudden your computer's unusable.
Yeah, you're halfway, between two operating systems, Windows 10 and, say, Windows 8, and you're dressed up and no place to go.
That's one of the reasons I urge people to download the ISO, the burnable CD image, well, DVD image.
Optical disk image.
Yeah, the optical disk image, because then you can always do a clean install using that as long as you have your serial number. And I completely agree. And the thing that Joe is talking about, if I may shamelessly plug this for just a moment. Joe is talking about I run a website called AskNick.com, which currently I'm using to display news stories. Lots and lots of news. Thank you. Lots and lots of news stories in lots of different categories. And then one of them is always the headline. And I update it several times a day. And then I tweet that headline, and it's on Google Plus, and it's on Facebook. So people can if they're following me, they can readily get to that news story. And like I said, I update it several times during the day, and there's multiple categories. So if you're interested in particular area like Apple or Microsoft or Google or hardware or whatever, you've got a chance. Actually, the kind of fun area is miscellany. It's all the stuff that doesn't fit anywhere else. I'm thinking of adding a section
PowerPoint.
What?
Death by PowerPoint.
Death by PowerPoint. Really doesn't quite fit anywhere else. I'm thinking of adding a section on science and maybe one on gaming.
And the one big selling point of that is it's all hand-picked. You say so in various posts everywhere. So there's really nothing quite automatic about it. It's all something that you found interesting.
Yeah, so it's stuff that I found interesting. Yes, thank you for pointing that out.
If you like what Nick likes, you'll like it too.
Exactly.
So going back a ways to the guy that had the problem with his SSD running out of space.
Yeah.
It's likely, I think it's likely that his user profile got stored on a C drive as well, and that may be huge because there's all kinds of hidden files on that. Plus, the user part of the registry is stored there.
Right.
And there, as I don't use Windows that often, but I've seen there are tools that can move your user profile off the boot drive to an alternate drive, like his spinning drive.
Yep. And I didn't think of that, but you're absolutely right. That could be a large part of it too.
I remember back in at least in the XP and Windows 2003 days, the user manager used to be able to do that, used to show it, hey, this is where I want my profile to be, and it would move things around
right
for you.
Now, the bad part about that,
the hidden stuff.
Right, the bad part about that is, of course, it would slow down your boot because loading that 2, 3, sometimes 4 gigabyte file takes a lot longer on a spinning drive than it does on an SSD drive.
I guess it would. Yeah. And, what would you rather do, have enough space or take a while to log in?
The trade-off you have to make, and you should be aware of it before you make it, right? So, I absolutely agree. The profile, sadly, starts out a couple of meg, and it can grow to multiple gigs. And I don't even know all of what's in there. And half of it's got to be junk. But it's just another instance of, it's like the registry. Microsoft is really good at putting things into the registry and really, really lousy at taking things out again.
No, they just don't do it.
Well, yeah.
That's the bottom line. They just don't.
The user.dat file, which is the user portion of the registry, that user's portion of the registry is stored there too. So, as we all know, you put stuff into the registry, there's nothing to compact that. That just grows and grows and grows.
Right. And so really the thing to do is start out with a larger SSD drive. 225 megabytes may not make it anymore. You need a half a gig or maybe even a gig.
Terabyte.
I meant terabyte. What did I say?
Meg.
I have Dave Enright disease.
See? We've been around
256 gigabyte, yeah.
Yeah.
I would suggest for your other caller there that's having trouble with his Kindle Fire, I looked in the Amazon App Store. There is TuneIn. That's a free app, and it tunes in lots and lots and lots of radio stations. And once you have that installed, search for WGMC, and you can play it through there. Every Saturday, I listen to you through TuneIn on Roku. Same sort of concept.
Excellent. So that that's excellent. Thank you, Joe. We really appreciate that. So for who was that, Walt? No, that's he wanted. Well, anyway, we're going to tell Will. So look for a program called TuneIn, and then in that you can search for WGMC, which is the call letters of this station, and listen in through that. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with more Soundbites and member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesca.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
I'm throwing you off a little bit.
43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. That's all right. We're here. And we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. Have a little problem.
Uh-huh.
I made another upgrade to the latest Mac OS this week, and now every time I open mail, I get a message that says cannot send message using the new server, using the server rochester.rr.com. Then it goes down and it gives me iCloud and rochester.rr.com. So I use the connection doctor, and my connection seems to be good. I can send and receive email, but I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to do with this message or how to get rid of it.
Well, basically it means it's trying to send the message at that moment, and it can't for some reason. And it's asking you to pick a different sending server if you want to try using a different server. So it sounds like you have the Roadrunner sending server put in twice in your list, if it offers you that as a second selection. Or you could try sending it through the iCloud server, which it probably wouldn't go if it's addressed from Roadrunner. It's one of the picky things that mail servers have, is that, generally speaking, you need to send mail through the server of the system you're connected to.
Okay, now I've never used iCloud before. I've only used rochester.rr.com. Now, I got a little risque this time, and it asked me if I wanted to set up iCloud when I upgraded the OS, so I said yes. So I assumed everything was okay. But
yeah, so that's why it added iCloud as one of the possible servers.
Oh.
So in your mail program, go into Preferences, and then Accounts, and then SMTP Server List. So the SMTP is the sending mail server. And check the settings for the Roadrunner server and make sure they're set properly. And if you see two of them, delete one so that you only have one server. So it could be that one of them's right, one of them's wrong. And so most of the time it uses the right one, and this time it used the wrong one.
It's also possible if there's one message he's trying to send that's stuck in a queue.
Right.
Because it's like there's a picture attached, it's too big to send or whatever it may be. So if he looks in his pending...
Outbox or sending box, whatever. Yeah,
right,
I don't
right.
What to call it.
Oh, okay. You may find that there's one message. Maybe you tried to send a picture to somebody or a sound file or whatever. Roadrunner will only accept up to a certain size, and then it rejects it. So it's sitting there saying, I can't send this one. The next time you start it up, it says, I can't send this one. So you need to go into the, I don't know if it's called Outbox or Pending or what it might be called, but look to see if there are any messages that have not been sent.
Okay, so it says Outbox, so I guess I need to look for Outbox.
Yeah, so in your Outbox is a list of all the messages waiting to be sent. Okay. Normally, you don't see your outbox because it's only there when messages haven't been sent. So when you hit send, it goes in the outbox, and then it finishes sending, and the outbox disappears. It's a little annoying. The outbox is only there when you're actually sending something, and then it moves it to the sent box. But if there's a message that hasn't finished sending yet, it will be in the outbox.
Okay, so here is outbox, and it does have a message in it, and there's an attachment. Can so I just delete that?
You could delete that message, and it will stop trying to send it, yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Got it.
Yep.
Thank you, as usual, sure. Guys. You did it again.
Yeah.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The other trick with Roadrunner, especially if you're using a laptop, is that when you set up your home computer, the Roadrunner sending server doesn't require a password because it knows you're connected to Roadrunner. But if you take your laptop or tablet or phone somewhere else and you're not connected to Roadrunner, you can't send any mail because you're not connected
right.
to Roadrunner.
Right.
So one of the tricks is in your sending server, you can use the Roadrunner mobile server. So instead of smtp-server.rochester.ro.com, and I'm annoyed that I remember that so easily, you want to use mobile-server.roadrunner.com.
There you go.
Or what's even better now, we've talked about this in the past, is that Roadrunner doesn't support IMAP mail. So when you download mail on your computer, your phone, and your tablet, they're all independent of each other. If you read it on one device or delete it on one device, it doesn't know. So you delete all the mail on your phone, and you have to delete all the same mail on your tablet, delete all the same mail on your computer. If you switch your server to mail.twc.com, Time Warner, it does support IMAP, and you can synchronize your email between all your devices.
Nice.
So it's a funny thing, you know, Roadrunner doesn't support IMAP, but Time Warner does. We thought Roadrunner was Time Warner. Different
yeah,
divisions.
Yeah, yeah. The left hand knoweth not
yeah.
who the right hand is. Never mind. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm hoping that you can solve the mystery of the invisible router. here's what's up. My mother had a desktop, and I installed a Netgear. Oh, it was a desktop running XP. I installed a Netgear router, and it worked just fine. You know, hardwire or hard connection to the desktop. It worked fine wirelessly when we went over to visit. This summer, she got a laptop running Windows 8.1. And the router still works. We go over there. We can connect wirelessly. Her laptop is connected wirelessly, but I can't find it. I wanted to change, I think, the at least the passwords, and I can't find it. And because I'm not familiar with 8.1, I don't know where to look, what to do.
You mean you can't physically find it, or you can't log into it?
I can't find it on the screen. The router is right where it's always been, physically, right next to the modem.
Oh yeah, you won't find the router on the computer screen. You need to go to the website in the router. So open your web browser, and the routers are usually 192.168.1.1.
Or okay. .0.1, depending yeah. on which side you're
on. Yeah, if you check what that computer's IP address is...
Well, if you go to the command line, and if you go to down... You're running which version of Windows?
8.1.
All right, if you can open up a window, and you know, a command window, and type in ipconfig
mm-hmm.
and hit enter, that will show you all your addresses, and that will show you your base address that Steve was talking about, the gateway, 192.168.1.1, normally.
Yeah, so that will show you the computer's address, and it will show you the gateway address.
Yep.
Right.
And then you put that gateway address into your web browser, and it will log into it will take you to the login page of the router.
And you log in there, and that's where you can change all your settings on whether you want to, you know, the password for, say, getting past the firewall and everything else.
Okay. All right. Well, I will give that a shot. If I have problems not finding it still, could I... I don't know, reinstall the router software or connect the laptop via a wire to the, router?
It, yeah,
all the router software is built into the router,
yeah.
and you control it with a web browser.
Let me back up one. Your mother's laptop is running fine on the internet?
Yes, everything runs fine. I just don't see the router... anywhere on the screen. For example,
you won't.
Home,
you won't.
On my desktop, I have I double click on my Asus icon, and it will take me just to where you guys were saying.
So you created.
Somebody created a shortcut for you.
Yes.
So go to Go to the web browser, type in the address, and then you can save that as a shortcut on the desktop.
Okay.
That's all that is. There's no magic there. They don't generally show it.
And I'm sorry, I wouldn't put it on her desktop.
No, there's no.
You don't want her accidentally changing something.
Yeah, you don't want
your mother
or resetting your whole router.
Right. You don't want her wandering around in that software. You really don't.
Yeah.
So if I were you, I would not put that on there at all.
Heck no.
Okay. All right. Well, then I will give that a shot. Thank you very much.
You're sure. Welcome.
We see this a lot when something gets set up. You can create a shortcut and from a web browser page and put that shortcut on the desktop. Many people do that all the time.
And the problem with putting it on there for his mother, and nothing against her, people will tend to try to clear off or organize their desktop.
Right.
And that's good, but when they click on it and they don't know what they're doing, and it opens up to the screen. And they might accidentally click the reset button by mistake.
Yep.
Boom, there goes the router all totally reset. Nobody's getting on.
Right. Right.
So, if it's just one of those things that they don't need it, don't put it there.
Although the other half of that problem is the router companies will often release updates to the router to fix problems. There have been a lot of problems in home routers leaving back doors open, leaving WAN configuration open so anyone in the internet can change your router. And so you need to install those firmware updates. I just happened to notice on mine, my son was complaining that 5 gigahertz wasn't turned on our router. So I logged into it. Yeah, an update came out a year ago and I didn't know it.
Yep.
So I installed it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of these the firmware updates that you need to install because you are now a network administrator.
Whether you want to be or not, you are a network administrator. Absolutely. And we're seeing more and more people just, there is no set it and forget it.
Mm-mm.
In the computer world. There really, truly is not. And the more stuff you have, the more updates you have to have. How many of us have ever gone and looked to see if there are updates for our phones?
Yep.
For our tablets, for our Chromebooks.
Now,
Chromebooks will tell you.
Right. Apple's been getting a little more annoying lately with, there's an update available. You should install it now. And so they're doing the same thing Microsoft was. Install now or remind me later. And twice a day, I have to hit remind me later because I'm not ready yet.
You need to get ready because there's going
to
be another one behind it. Another one behind it.
I didn't want to do it till I had a backup. So at least I remembered that much. Do your backup, then do your update.
Right.
But yeah, so they're getting insistent because they know people aren't installing these updates. And most of the updates include security fixes to patch holes that let bad guys into your computer.
Right. So, and we're always complaining about, Microsoft lazy, blah, blah, Apple lazy, blah, blah, blah. It's really the user who's not doing the install.
Yeah.
The update,
which is why
Microsoft
is going to start forcing you to update. You can't not update because of this issue. Yeah.
Right. All right. That brings us to the end of another show. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Please call earlier and more often. It's Chicago style calling here in here at Soundbites. And we're but don't go away because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. So you'll be pretty safe. Pretty safe. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. Next week is going to be an encore presentation of Soundbites. We will be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. This is the last episode of the year for us. We'll be back in a brand new year with a brand new set of episodes. So please have a joyous, merry, wonderful, blessed Christmas, New Year, Kwanzaa, everything that gets celebrated at this time of the year. And we will see you next year with more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.